Off the Ball Breakfast.
How's your golf? And this is my favourite answer. How's your golf? My golf is where it should be. It's proportional to the amount of practice I'm putting in, which isn't a lot.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
Anyone can dream it, but to be it, you must never stop competing. Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish women's rugby.
Welcome along. It is the World Cup show. It is the week before the quarterfinals, last round of the pool stage. This time around, at least Ireland know they're qualified before they play against the Black Ferns, the reigning World Cup champions. But they meet to decide who is going to top Pool C in Brighton on Sunday afternoon. The World Cup show here on Off the Ball is with thanks to Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. Never stop competing. Former Ireland back row Anna Capeless is with us. Anna, how are you keeping?
Good now, how are you?
Not too bad. You're having all the fun though. You're over in England at the moment for this tournament, which is flying, it would seem. The viewing figures for the first weekend were incredible on the BBC and on BBC Two. And also, the stadiums have been packed. The final is already sold out. What's the experience been like on the ground?
It's been absolutely unreal. Like, I'm actually blown away myself with how... I was expecting it to be really good, but maybe I just couldn't envision what exactly that meant for a women's rugby. Like, it seems a bit straightforward, but, the variety of the crowd, the family atmosphere, I know people like that comes up a lot when you talk about women's rugby, but it's been so incredibly heartwarming. Just many, many moments that have just absolutely floored me, like emotionally. And I know that's the same for a lot of people who've, you know, been around a while that are seeing this kind of for the first time in the women's game. It's been unreal. And like, to top that off, like there's many strands we could speak about there, but like, the rugby has been quality. Like, I've always been, you know, like real trying to get people into women's rugby and talking about women's rugby. And I know a lot of people have, and, you know, and there's so much, investment gone into time and money gone into, like, you know, promoting this. But like, then sometimes the quality hasn't been there. The quality is here. And like, all it took was, which is exactly what we were asking for, was, you know, some contracts and some time, and for more players to have more time playing in camp. Recovery is such a massive part of it, like not having to go to work. Now, this is obviously isn't the case for all of the teams, and that's one of the points of the context of this World Cup. But the quality of the rugby has matched with the event like tenfold. So there's been no, you know, often that's been the first kind of point of attack for people who are kind of, you know, ready to take down the women's game, and they haven't had a second to do it, because the quality of the rugby has just been unreal. It's been unreal.
Yeah, I was chatting to Maggie Alfonsi about this on Monday, and she was saying like that's one of the things she's really enjoyed so far. Even though we've had a few kind of one-sided games, she was saying we've seen four or five genuine contenders to lift this cup at the end. I thought she was doing a bit of a Yara and trying to say, well, you know, England are on this massive unbeaten run at the moment, so she's of course going to claim, and was trying to point out the France game was really close back in the Six Nations, so don't read too much into this run that they're on. But I think she's right. Like, I mean, we've seen New Zealand playing really well. We've seen Canada, who've been like really, really impressive. We know obviously what England can do going into this as well. And these teams have shown quality. And then even I was thinking back to last weekend, I know Ireland beat Spain, but Spain's forwards really impressed me, and I thought they were really good. They put Ireland under pressure during the game as well. And some of these nations that are trying to close the gap appear to have come on quite a bit since the last World Cup as well.
Yeah, and just one point on that, on the kind of one-sided affairs before I kind of launch into the Ireland and Spain thing, is that one of the games I was at, England-Samoa, so it finished 92-3, right? And you might look at the result and be like, oh, for goodness sake, but what, like... First of all, you're getting an absolute try fest, like, and tries that they had to work hard for as well. Like, nothing was given. Samoa were just like, you know, hammering them and just doing whatever they could. But like, you're seeing super tries, like really creative tries out of England as well, because this is their, you know, audition. And I'm using that word a lot because the pool stages can be like an audition series, you know, for what's to come in terms of knockout or your bigger matches. But it was amazing. Sorry, I'm going to stop using the word unreal. I keep wanting to use it because it's just been so great. But so it was 92-3, right? That was the end score. Not one person left the stadium. everyone was on their feet for every try. And when Samoa scored the 3 points, so they won a penalty off a scrum penalty against England, right? And this, like, you know, this young girl who's like, you know, she's like her choice kicker in not the Brumbies, the Waratahs, I think. Or is it the Brumbies? I'm actually confusing the teams now. She plays in Super Rugby, right? Third choice, because, you know, she's an international Samoan player. There's lots of Aussie players and other players that are around that mark for those teams, you know. So Justin says 32-meter kick and, like, bangs it, like, straight up into the crowd behind the uprights, and the whole stadium was on its feet. So, you know, those minnow games, like, even from the Men's World Cup, they can be, like, super enjoyable for those reasons, because you know the underdog status. And it was, like, one of the best moments of the World Cup so far. Like, just the context of that, you know, that a team like Samoa, who have full-time jobs, who aren't getting the support that they need at home, like, coming. And that's a real... When you look at those scorelines, those big differences, that's the story that it's telling. And then you talk about Spain. Like, I think that as well that that's our... taintedness of the men's rugby world, which, you know, we're all fans of, and I've been following, you know, my whole life, that you'd think Spain and you'd think, oh, well, that has to be a gimme because Spain is not considered a, you know, a rugby superpower. But Spain and women's rugby, like, they used to be in the Six Nations. They've always been, you know, in and around the top of European rugby until the layout of the Six Nations, they wanted to match the men's and women's tournaments. Mm. So they actually booted Spain out and invited Italy in. And Spain has always been, you know, kind of suffering because of that then, because they could have been a Six Nations team all these years. But they're, you know, they win European championships, and they've got this kind of, you know, this... blissful kind of, like, well, we're Spanish and we know what we're at, kind of a thing, instead of this hierarchy maybe that we might be guilty of, you know, all Ireland, we're only, you know, all little old Ireland, how could we fare against, you know, New Zealand or Australia or those big superpowers? We're actually Spain, just like, because they're out of that a little bit, they've got this lovely kind of blissful ignorance of where they should be. And I think that really showed, like, their attack was amazing at times, like, and they made Ireland look really normal at times. And they had also gone for a much changed team. So it was hard to know, was this a weakened team? But it certainly didn't look it. And they were able, like, they got a bonus point, a 4-point bonus point, you know, which was brilliant. And it was so entertaining to watch as well. Well, not so much as an Irish fan, but I know that everyone else was, like, gunning for Spain. And it was a really enjoyable match as well.
No, I think Ireland would have much preferred if it was a more comfortable game. But job done, as Scott Beaman kind of said after the game. Just on the Spain point in the Six Nations, I wonder now, when it's decoupled as well, Anna, from the weekends or not on at the same time, because I understood why they wanted to align everything back in the day. But now I kind of wonder if it's when we're in a different window for the women's competition, why it can't be a Seven Nations tournament, when it's really clear that Spain would be able to mix it with the bottom three teams in that Six Nations easily.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think it's something that will have to happen down the line. It's really strange because I played a season in Spain a couple of years ago, and people in the club are asking me, like, so do you think that, you know, Spain will be left back into the Six Nations soon? Like, as if this was something that they'd been talking about, or this is something that they believed was going to happen. And I was like, what? Who's telling you this? Like, this is, you know, so that's where they believe. So they're obviously banging on World Rugby's door and Six Nations door all the time, saying, like, we want to be here. And even, and then they put in performances like that, you know, which probably does, you know, raise an eyebrow or two, like, around, should Ireland be beating them more comfortably than that? But not really. Like, the last, if you look at the last, you know, the two previous fixtures with Spain, we scraped past them in WXV3 to win that WXV3, and then, you know, made that massive jump to WXV1. So if Spain had knocked a penalty over, that would have completely changed the trajectory of Irish rugby in the past few years. So Spain is so close to, like, upsetting what Ireland, you know, could have achieved. And also Spain was, like, pretty much responsible for us not qualifying for the last World Cup. So they're due an awful lot more respect than God, that was a great performance from them. Like, they're really serious contenders, you know, and they even felt themselves that they weren't as best prepared for this World Cup as they could be. So they're certainly one to watch for the future for women's rugby. And it'll be interesting to see how they fare in the men's side of things at the World Cup, the men's World Cup as well.
Yeah, a little bit kind of men in black style. I'm trying to forget that 8-5 defeat in that World Cup roundabout Repege tournament, which all went horribly wrong and maybe changed the course of Irish rugby.
Oof. Sorry for bringing it up.
I know. But it's just, it's one of those things. It felt like that was kind of a dark point before what has kind of moved out now. But that's why I was interested in your take on how Ireland have played in the first two games, because job done, I think, was a good phrase for the Irish management to be doing after the weekend. In the place that they want to be was something else that Scott had said to us at the weekend. I think that is generally the feeling, isn't it? It's the points have been achieved. The quarterfinal has now been achieved. But if they're going to be contenders now at this tournament, it steps up big style even from this weekend.
Yeah, it does, absolutely. And I suppose Ireland are lucky with the running order of the pool games. You know, they kind of have a big ramp into Black Ferns this weekend and were able to test a few things and still get two bonus point wins, you know, in the first two rounds. So, yeah, it does. It gets bigger now. Like, this is the big one. Like, everyone I know is going to be in Brighton this weekend. Like, literally, I don't know anyone that's going to be home. Maybe a few of the teachers that couldn't get any more days off. But it's just going to be a phenomenal occasion. But I don't know, are we going to be served up kind of 2014 World Cup Ireland Black Ferns kind of memories? Like, who knows how it's going to go? Obviously, the team is coming out tomorrow, so that's the big question. Like, is it a kind of a go hard, try and get, you know, a big win against the Black Ferns to try and recreate those 2014 memories and even the memories from last year where Ireland kind of proved themselves that they want to be top of the, you know, the reckoning? Or do you kind of like keep things in the bank and go hard for the quarterfinal? Now, the interesting thing is on the other side of the pool, South Africa beat Italy.
Yeah.
So it will be... if we beat the Black Ferns, we will play South Africa. All going well this weekend. Now, we're all going kind of as predicted. And that goes if South Africa doesn't beat France. But I feel like after the first two rounds, they might, and France as well, need a bit of time to warm up, that France will kind of be in good gear at that stage. Who knows? South Africa could pull out.
Am I right in saying, Anna, when it comes to this, like, it's going to be France or South Africa, but the only benefit to topping the pool, if they were to go hard at this Sunday, would be that England would be down on the other side of the draw and you wouldn't have to play them?
Yeah.
It's a mini benefit in and of itself.
It is. So actually, I know it's really hard to know. I just want to see the team now to know that if that's how they are thinking, because that's ideally the route you'd like to take. The likelihood of like beating like between Black Ferns, England or Canada, who are the other kind of really strong contenders to get to a final between those three teams, England is the one that you least want to play, especially for Ireland. Like, England have always just are able to turn it on for Ireland. I feel like beating Ireland beating England is still a step beyond where we're at, especially with our depth, because it's, you know, it's going to be a full 80 minute game if you're playing England. Who knows against, like, if we're talking about going back to like this weekend, who knows? I like, my biggest thing is, so there's a lot of, the last time that Ireland and the Black Ferns played was in that WXV1 and Ireland won. And most people woke up in the morning and were like, oh my God, you know, this is amazing. And I remember saying beforehand, like, I just think it's a little step too far for this Irish team to beat the Black Ferns tonight in Vancouver. And I was delighted to be absolutely wrong. So, you just can't really tell. The only thing about the Black Ferns is that they're not going to win WXV1. They're coming to win a World Cup. Like, they're not bothered on the interim, whereas that for Ireland was a massive achievement, like, on their kind of restructuring pathway and you know, legacy and things. So when it comes to this weekend, do you go for a big win again or do you not and rest your bodies? And like, the attritional nature of the pool stages, how do you look at that? Like, is qualifying for the quarterfinal good enough? Mm. Or are you strategically trying to get to a semi-final? And if you get to a semi-final, whoever you come up against, and whether you win or lose, you automatically play again another week in a third place playoff. So getting through a quarter-final adds two more weekends of rugby to your calendar anyway, and a place to go for a chance to go for third place, which is really interesting. So this weekend is just such a, it's crazy because this was the one we were building up to for so long. Ireland, Black Ferns, Brighton. And now it's kind of like, oh, are we almost kind of skipping past this one to go straight to the quarterfinal to see what's going to happen there? So I don't know. I think they still are obviously going to throw everything at it and believe that they can win. But I'm not sure that that's the, you know, like if they do lose. And actually, sorry, and I'll allow you for a minute something else. Then. In 2014, I remember the girl saying this to me, that Goose was their head coach. And it was kind of a similar, you know, pool stage thing. Like, you don't have to win everything to go through. And Goose had asked them beforehand, do we need to win this match? And they were kind of like, you know, oh my God, shocked. And at the question, you know, you go into every game to win it, you know. And he was like, do we need to win? And they were like, no, we actually don't need to win. So that air of taking the pressure off, I feel like that's the question that they need to be asking this weekend. Yes, we want to play really well. Yes, our audition series is still continuing, actually. That's the luxury of them having qualified already. Do we need to win? No. But could we win? Yes.
It's an interesting one. And this is where I can understand both sides of logic here, which is maybe you want to just keep the momentum going. Put in a strong performance, say they beat New Zealand. It should have no material effect, actually, on the France or South Africa game that follows. The other hand, probably if they were winning more in recent years, you might say box clever, make a whole load of changes, put a team out there, do exactly what the New Zealand legends have been saying. Ireland will take one eye off the ball for this game because they only want to be ready for the quarterfinal. I'm not sure which is right, but there is also the argument that if you play out the second stringers and you take a beating from New Zealand, that then kills the momentum before a quarterfinal. So maybe it has to be kind of a sensible choice between the two, Anna.
I agree. I think that's what it's going to have to be. You know, in terms of like personnel, so if we're looking at like selection here, you know, the 12-13, so Eve Higgins and Aoife Dalton.
They've merged into one player. I like this at this stage.
Yeah, Eve Dalton and Aoife Higgins. they've just been phenomenal, but they've also played an awful lot of rugby, and we want them firing for a quarterfinal. So maybe not, you know, maybe still like give them the start, but look to change them maybe a bit earlier, which Aoife Dalton has been, but Eve Higgins hasn't as much. Like, she's got a serious engine on her, but, you know, we can't expect an Eve Higgins in game one to be the same Eve Higgins in game four and five, you know. So that's got to be managed. I really enjoyed like the front row and the battles through the pack, actually, you know, in swapping positions there between Spain and Japan, and, you know, impact or like putting up your hand, and everyone's been putting up their hand. Like, which is what you want to Scott Beamon, as much of a headache as that is. Everyone offers something different. I don't think you're weakening things in any way if you include, like, for example, Claire Bowles, who's really, you know, should really have so many more caps to her name because of how hard she's worked. And then she came on last week and made 22 tackles, you know, and she wasn't hugely prominent in attack, but then the work she's putting in defence is amazing. So, you know, there's just different jigsaw pieces to work with. And I think Scott Beamon is someone that knows his players really well, so will know what he wants. Like, I feel like he knows exactly, and he's known for a while, what exactly his plan is this whole time. And when we look at, you know, like Stacey Flood, like, I think that she's a player who can like kind of just keep going and keep delivering. She didn't have her greatest game last week, but I think that's kind of normal in the sense of, the opening game was really exciting, kind of a lull in the middle week, and then you're building back into the Black Ferns. So, I don't think that's a cause for concern at all. So a few minutes from McGillivray, Enya Breen has been really good to, like, stick to her own character when she comes in, you know, and whether that's, I presume that's her kind of, like, solidifying her place as an impact player on the bench, because she's obviously covering that 10 position as well. There's so many more I could go through there now, like Brittany Hogan, who's been amazing, probably wanted a bit more of a rest last week, but was called in early, frustratingly due to the knock Sam Monaghan took. I suppose the interesting thing for this weekend is, will both of our co-captains be available?
So Fiona Hayes reckons that Sam Monaghan might be available, and her source on this was Sam Monaghan's mum, who she bumped into on the way out of the stadium. So that was the perfect journalistic work from Fiona Hayes on the way out. She's like, is Sam all right? And said, it looks like it's just a stinger to the hip, so she should be okay. Now, I suppose the thing is, depending on how her recovery went this week, I think she was doing some training, they could well go, look, we don't want to take any risk of aggravating this and we just won't play her.
Which, to be honest, shouldn't that be your approach anyway? Mm. You know, unless you're in a final. And even at that, like if there's a risk of, you know, furthering your injury or making things worse. So if she is not 100%, I would, like, there's no way I'd play her. Same with Adele, but I do feel like their captaincy and their co-captain, it works best when the two of them are on the pitch together. And if that can't happen this weekend, it has to happen in a quarter final. So they don't need that, and it's been nice for Amy Lee Costigan to like have her like the leadership handed to her as well. But that's something that the players need to manage as well, because I noticed last week that Amy Lee, who has to obviously come off her wing to speak to the referee when the forwards are causing trouble, that she needs to come in and speak to the referee, and there was a lot of kind of, will we do this? Will we kick for post, touch, whatever? And there was a lot of kind of ideas being picked up on the ref's mic, even between players. So that's the only thing that they need to manage if we don't have Sam or Adele.
Do I kind of assume that it's going to be Bevan Parsons one side and Amy Lee on the other? Because sometimes the players can find form. And like Anna McGann's form has been really good in the preseason games, then gets a couple of tries last week. Like if I'm her, I'm thinking I've done enough here to get a start.
Yeah, she didn't get the ball enough last weekend is the thing. I'd actually like to see Bevan and Anna come off their wing a little bit more.
Okay.
So I don't know if there's a kind of a message in training, you know, that's what needs to happen and who's shown that the best. But it does look like, I don't know, that the Japan squad was like the Anna McGann as an impact player worked quite well. So is that something that you do give Anna McGann another crack at it now this weekend? I try to give her the chance to get on the ball a bit more and then see if that's what would suit you against whoever you come up against in the quarterfinal.
Mm. Alina Perry, a very unusual route to this team. We probably discussed it here on the show already. Has she kind of given a bit of food for thought as well with the way that she played last weekend?
Definitely. She really put her hand up and like got on loads of ball, got a key turnover. I think I would be really happy to keep her as an impact player because of what Nevo Dowd brings in terms of speed of defence. And if you look back at that Black Ferns game, Nevo Dowd was a nightmare for the Black Ferns, an absolute nightmare. And she like absolutely stopped everything that they were trying to do at Source. So she was key in that victory that time. So I think that as well as Elena Perry has done, Nevo Dowd has also done enough to back that up in the meantime also. And the squad are really good around her at covering her defensively, because she shoots out of the line. To put players under pressure, and the squad kind of is really good at reacting off her to cover that. And as much as Elena Perry was absolutely brilliant and couldn't really have done any more, I think Nevo Dowd is like instrumental to this Irish squad.
And just on New Zealand, we've had their legends trying to put the pressure on and say Ireland are going to play a dummy team or whatever else, and they're going to think about the knockout stages. Not to try and put you on the spot here to get you in trouble with anyone in New Zealand, but are we overlooking the fact that New Zealand could rest players here too?
Yeah, I was thinking that today. Maybe, but they have had, you know, if you look at their kind of, like if you look at, they've had two almost complete switches of squads there, pretty much like Ireland. So actually, you know, who is the starting team for either of these? Like, who are you actually resting if both squads have had like change around? So at this stage, and I suppose it's been managed so far in terms of players' expectations, but at this stage, we actually don't know who it is that the coaches themselves see as the ones they're resting and the ones that they're, you know, putting at the top or the bottom of their pile. Is it another audition weekend? Like for both teams? Probably. And we'll know, I'm saying we'll know when we see the teams, but do we even know at that stage? Like, I suppose the one thing that would be a signifier for Ireland is there's still a couple of players who haven't seen any game time at all or haven't seen any jerseys yet. So Nicole Fowley, for example, Maeve Dealey, and Beth Buttimer, who's still uncapped as well. The thing is as well that if Ireland do qualify for a semi-final, so we have another, and that's now three extra matches to play, you're going to have niggles and injuries, and like calling upon someone who hasn't been called upon yet, that's really difficult thing to do, to say, yes, I trust you in this game, even though I didn't trust you beforehand.
100%. So, like, this is the last chance to blood someone without a knockout rugby game being on the line as well. Like, I think Buttimer's probably been brought for experience because she's still so young. But at the same time, if you are going to trust her to get on the field, you probably need to get some competitive minutes in this weekend.
So it could be the only time to do it. So whether that's we're sending in a weakened side because we're already comfortable with who we're going to play in the quarterfinal, or is it like, no, we need her or whoever it is, you know, to be ready for whatever we're going to come up against after this round. I suppose, so this was great having big chats like the night before the team is called, and then tomorrow we could be eating our words in any way. But like, that is a really important thing, just to not have had game time so far can make the environment really difficult. That was like me in 2017. It was just a really hard place to be, and felt like I wasn't trusted. And then I underperformed when I got my minutes on the pitch because I felt like I wasn't trusted. So that's definitely something for him to manage and in the long run. I'm sure it's something he's thought through as well.
Just something way away from the game, right? That I've noticed so far, not just the fact that people will go up and chat to the families and so on, but even like the social media use is so different to the men at the Rugby World Cup. So 2023, the lads go to France, they all put up their last message, going to do our best for the team, whatever else. I'm off social media now for the best part of a month. I'm friends with a few of the players. I've noticed that they are still sticking up stories on Instagram. They're having the crack about singing Killer. There's been the whole thing about the fleece being made or not being made by Canterbury and all this type of stuff. They seem to take all this stuff in their stride, and it doesn't seem to concern them.
It's been honestly class to see it. It's been so engaging, so funny, and at no stage, and this goes hand in hand with the quality of the rugby that I was talking about as well. Like, they're all backing it up. You know, you can't be doing that if you're going to play, like, you know, underperform. So it kind of holds you accountable. It's like, well, if I'm posting TikToks, then I better perform. And I'm not going to be posting TikToks if I'm not performing, kind of a thing. But also in a World Cup-like environment, there's so much downtime because you can't be switched on all the time. You can't be. And it just so happens that these videos, which are hilarious and hilarious to make, and it shows so much of what the squad is like and shows so much of what the characters in the squad are like and the relationships between teams and the relationships like between like management and players and stuff has been like really interesting to watch, really engaging, like really funny. Like, I actually think that this is how it should be. Like, if this content was available on the men's side, people would be loving it. Like, they wouldn't be able to get enough. Like, remember back in the day when like James Haskell and Sean O'Brien were like roommates and everyone was like, oh, they're so cool, they're so funny. Like, that's what people wanted even then. Like, so this is it's just been this extra element, which is just an extra element of society now. And because the women's game has grown in the time frame that it has and just happens to have, you know, this extra strand of media just so readily available, and like also the girls know how to use it because, you know, as a professional men's player, you're not worried too much about endorsements or like promoting the game or your own kind of recruitment or your own profile, because they're all, you know, professional men's players, so they can just kind of do what they want for while they're playing. That's not the case, or hasn't been the case for the women. So it's just grown hand in hand naturally. And honestly, I'm here for it. Like, it's been unreal. Like, oh, sorry, I used it again. But it's been class. It's been class. I like, literally, give us more and more. And it's hugely emotional. Like, you know, did you watch Fiji on like their day off in the hotel, and they organized like a fashion show up and down, and they all just wearing their kit or whatever they had in their bags, like doing a fashion show walk, and they're all screaming and shouting. That is what you need when you're after losing two games, you're getting, you know, rubbish comments from home. You're like, that's what you need to put out there to show that doesn't affect you, to bring you closer together. It's been amazing to watch, and there's so many examples. So like, I know the Irish girls are really good at it, but you've got to follow players from like USA, South Africa, Fiji, like the English girls are brilliant at it as well. Brazil, like it's, there's just so much brilliant content.
Oh, for sure. And look, there's a huge market for it as well. We stuck up a thing about the fleece last week because our reporter Susanna Mullen was over there. She asked Anna McGann about it, who was in the original video. And next thing, it just took off. Like, people are just interested in it. And I think it has been refreshing for people to get a peek behind the scenes, which you just don't see normally. And look, I'm sure as well, Anna, for players, right? If you're there, and whether you're winning or losing, you're going back to what is, I'm sure, a lovely fancy hotel room they're staying in. You're bored just waiting around for the next session or whatever's going to come around. At least this fills the time in for you.
It fills the time, and that's hugely valuable, because if you don't have something like that to kind of bring you together, you risk kind of going into your room and maybe spending a bit of time in your head that you shouldn't be. You know, you need to be with others, and then like obviously it needs to be balanced. But like, if someone texts you like, oh, we're going to make a video for something, like that's such an easy, quick way to get out of your room, out of your head. You have a laugh. And you're like bonding with your teammates, like, so not only is it stops boredom, it stops a lot of potential other kind of runaway, like, oh, I'm not connecting with my team, or I've got no one to talk to, or, you know, just, you know, simple little details like that.
Well, look, to use your phrase, I'm sure it's going to be an unreal weekend in Brighton. It's going to be incredible. You must be looking forward to it hugely. Quite aside from the rugby, Brighton's one of those great cities to actually go and visit as well.
Yeah, I actually studied French in Brighton a long time ago. Nice. So I'm excited to go back. But Brighton and rugby upsets go hand in hand, you know. So we'll see. And it'll be just an amazing weekend, because obviously England and Australia are playing there on the Saturday night. So I don't know how everyone's getting there. But or where everyone's staying, but it'll just be a brilliant, brilliant weekend, another brilliant weekend of women's rugby.
They'll work it out. We've got a South African producer behind the glass at the moment. I can see the pain on his face the minute you bring Brighton up. It sends him into a 1,000-yard stare. So he's happy enough the women's team are going well at the tournament, so it's balanced out across the chat. Anna, it's been great to chat to you as always. Thanks a million for joining us on the World Cup show.
Long.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
Anyone can dream it, but to be it, you must never stop competing. Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish women's rugby.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
How's your golf? And this is my favourite answer. How's your golf? My golf is where it should be. It's proportional to the amount of practice I'm putting in, which isn't a lot.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.